Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction? Devin Tilley here, and I am so jazzed to talk about labor. Jazzed about labor? That's all the stuff we're just pulling our hair out trying to figure out. And as I was getting ready to do this podcast, I'm not a very good detailed person, so I'm looking at the podcast rules of the game. That shout out to Scott and my team of systemizing this thing. And what we're going to talk about is getting inside and having a conversation around. Talk about construction where we're at. The message that we want to convey to you is that the industry is facing this perfect storm when it comes to employees with this aging workforce that is nearing retirement and this great resignation that we're going through where we're pulling skilled and professional talent into other, you know, they're all going other places, right? And the Gen Zs and all these other things are ignoring careers in construction for other industries. We all know that, right, Tribe? So approaching this crisis is using the same historical hiring approach. This is a recipe for disaster. And I raise my hand and say, Scott, go find someone that is thinking, that has lived this and is doing this. So instead of contractors and affiliates, we have to think about this and take a different approach. And we all need to rethink the roles that we're hiring for. And we have to identify those qualities and hard skills that are critical for success and those that can be trained and look outside the industry for talent that have the potential to be successful. And so the principles of the IO, or the Industrial Organizational Psychology, we need to provide an excellent framework for defining the problem. And we need to update talent management processes that are contributing to the problem and develop solutions to address these core issues. And so how this is going to benefit you by, we're bringing in Craig of High Match. He's worked in the industry for the last 15 years. And in fact, they started as a talent consultancy for builders. And they understand these issues and they've been there. They've lived it. They've worn the shoes that have led us to this point and have partnered with small firms to the largest builders in the country to mitigate these forces to ensure a healthy pipeline of highly qualified candidates. So from my perspective today, Tribe, I raise my hand and I'm with you, Tribe. Man, hiring is hard as we're doing all this stuff with all these different system-built factories around the globe of, yeah, you can just say move them from outside to inside in a factory, but there's a lot of other moving part, especially with all the stuff around digitizing construction. And right now, that's been harder than ever. And how should the Art of Construction Tribe be thinking about these hiring processes? So that's what we're going to challenge Craig with. And to address the lack of new construction talent, we need to attract the new warriors and the people from other industries and the Gen Zers to come in and say, man, we got some cool stuff going on here. And that's what this platform is for us all to say, hey, do you know you're this person or this person that's not sure what they want to do? Listen to this podcast and check out what the sexiness of construction. And we got to break down these stereotypes of who is a construction worker. It could be limiting, right? And so the example, we just launched a podcast with Charlie Chupp, the founder of Fading West. And in that podcast, I would highly recommend that. And I tell the story and where I was at their factory and we're working with their labor force and understanding how all this stuff comes together. And I'll tell the quick version of the story for you to go hear the longer version of the Fading West. And the part that I remember the most of all the amazing stuff they're doing on this amazing factory with all the Toyota Lean principles and all how they've, you know, the capacity and how they've done all this amazing work in systemizing all this stuff. But when I'm at the tour, one of their head guys is in there, and we walk into this house and he's like, look at that electrical panel. I was like, that is a sexy electrical panel. That is well done. You must have someone that's been doing electrical for a long time who wired all these home runs to the panel. And they've done a great job putting their digital kit of parts of orange wire here and this instead of it's a 12-2 ought six, but systemizing the home run. And he said, guess who did that? And we're looking around, and there's a girl on the other end of the mod. And he goes, she did it. And I'm like, wow, that's cool. And he goes, guess what she did 2.5 weeks ago before she worked here? A girl, 2.5 weeks ago, she braided hair. So, Tribe, think about that as we go in to hear some versions and get to know Craig Ellis, who has been in this industry, and his story. Let's get in and go know Craig in the speed round and have as much fun as possible with us humanizing construction. Lock and load, Tribe. What's your favorite beverage?
Yeah, so I've got two there. I've got four young kids, so really big on coffee. In fact, if there was a way to deliver that intravenously, my wife's a nurse and I've asked this question, I would take it that way. So probably 4 cups of coffee a day. I like having an Arnold Palmer. If I'm on the golf course, I think if you add a little vodka to it, it's affectionately known as a John Daly instead of an Arnold Palmer. So those are probably my two go-tos.
Oh man, that you're speaking my language there. To have as much fun as possible in building these businesses with people, you got to burn it at both ends sometimes.
That's right.
You know, when I at Art of Construction, we have our own little have as much fun as possible golf course, and the John Daly's are a great or the Ranch Waters is another. So, but
oh yeah, Ranch Waters is good too.
Putting those different chemicals together to have as much fun as possible. What's a favorite place you've traveled?
So for the views, it would be Salt Lake City. For the history, it would be Rome, and for the golf, it would be Kiawah Island, in Ooh. South Carolina.
I did what's the turtle course in Kiawah? Turtle.
Yeah. Turtle Point.
Yeah. Yeah. That I've golfed there. That's the alligators and what a neat spot for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Good man, time. I'm definitely relating to you. Give us one story from your trips.
So about the alligators, for folks who have never been before, they tell you at every single golf course that there are going to be gators and you're going to get close and they don't care about you. So, you know, just don't step on them and you'll be fine. So I was in a bunker probably 30 to 35 yards, from the green, and it was kind of flanked on one side by a pond. I try not to spend much time in the bunkers, but, they're unavoidable, out there
with your John Daly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we might have been 4 or 5 deep at that point. I'm not sure. So I hit a shot and I was very focused on it. It was a pretty good shot. And so I came kind of stumbling out of the bunker, and one of the guys I was playing with just yelled. He said, stop walking. And so I stopped and I looked down, and seriously, 3 feet from me was probably a 12-foot gator that was just perched on the side of this pond. Yeah, you got to be on your toes, head on a swivel out there in Kiowa for sure.
What's your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction silos? We're going to break down through the most important thing, people, that we passionately call the art of construction.
Yeah, obviously golf's a big part. Not a ton of time for multiple hobbies. Golf is a big one. You know, soccer and gymnastics and chasing kids around is not a hobby, but it takes up a lot of time. So those are probably the two things I spend most of my time on outside of work.
Cool. Well, it's an honor to have you here, Craig. What is your story that led you becoming the vice president of services at HighMatch?
Yeah. So I'm an industrial organizational psychologist, which is a mouthful. It's basically just taking the principles of psychology and applying them to work, right? So if you go to therapy and you say, hey, I need help, they're going to say, all right, well, in order for us to help you, we want to learn about you. And so they give you some assessments and they ask you questions, and through your answers, they learn how to help you best. So concept in workplace psychology is the same. It's just instead of therapy and counseling, we're helping organizations solve their problems through the application of psychological principles. So I am a psychologist, not a shrink or a therapist. I don't have ink blots bolted up on my wall. I started my career in a consultancy in Birmingham, Alabama. They had a lot of different specialties, but I found a lot of work with power companies, electrical distributors. I grew up in South Alabama in a town of about 40,000 people. Mom taught school, dad sold cars. And so I always felt, I think, attracted to people who shared a similar background. And so through that work, I got recruited to a large electrical distribution company based in Texas. They needed some help updating their talent management processes. And so I went to work for them internally and spent 4 years there. Still have a great relationship with them. They're a client. We work with them often. After that, I got bitten by the entrepreneurial bug and went out and built a business around pushing candidates' organizations based on cultural values and alignment. And from there, joined High Match's team as their vice president of services, leading the consulting arm of their business. And so, you know, I have always had a passion for consulting and helping people. That's why we go into psychology. But I've been fortunate to find an industry and group of organizations that align well with my background and values. So,
well, awesome. Well, this podcast is for contractors and its affiliates to grow their business. And to do that, you have to grow your business. You have to be able to elevate and delegate and be able to manage what we talk about with materials and technology. But it's the people that make all that stuff work.
Absolutely.
So I'd be curious, who are High Match's kind of clients within construction? And can you talk through kind of what do you do for them? Because those are the people listening on the other side of the mic.
Yeah, we've got a large footprint in construction. So David Weekly, Beezer, NVR, there's a small group down in my neck of the woods, Stone Mountain. Oakland is out in Salt Lake. We work with them. And so we kind of run the gamut from small to medium large on the construction side. And the solution always looks a little bit different depending on what the problem is. But primarily, we're helping construction companies iron out their recruiting and selection processes to help them get the most out of their selection and to raise their batting average on new hires. Right. So the goal for us is get the right people and help us get them to stay. And so that's really the primary thrust of our work with our clients in the construction space.
Awesome. Well, let's go all the way back to the beginning. Tell us more about your first position out of school for maybe people that are in that position and how you came to focus on the construction industry in your career.
Yeah, so I went to school at Troy University for my bachelor's degree up at Auburn for my graduate work. While I was finishing up my dissertation and studies at Auburn, I worked for a consultancy in Birmingham. And learned there that there's a certain style of organization that I fit well with. It's kind of a blue collar, folks who worked in high school and who enjoy working with their hands and manual labor. And so I was very fortunate as I was working with that consultancy in Birmingham to get recruited by an electrical distribution company out in Texas. And so made a few trips out there, met with them, learned that we shared a lot of the same values. They were very passionate about bringing in talented people and helping them grow in the business because there's a lot of mutual benefit to that. And so they had an extreme passion for career growth and taking care of their people. And that's something that we've seen, even now with High Match that we've seen is pretty common in construction. It tends to be, and I know you mentioned this earlier, an industry where people grow up in the business. And whenever a really solid construction company has a really solid employee, they want to take care of them. Mm-hmm. And so I found that to be very attractive and frankly, unique compared to some of the other industries that we worked with. And so I was very grateful to have the chance to spend some time with them and learn, all the things that I love about this business.
Awesome. Well, let's fast forward all the way to now. And can you talk through from your perspective, what are kind of some of the current lays of the land and what is the current job market for construction from that 30,000 foot view. With that being said, the days are long and the years are short, and this is a global and timeless fireside chat podcast.
Yes. So 30,000 foot view, it's hiring is challenging for organizations right now. And it's a great environment for candidates. So, you know, I think a lot of the data would say that the great resignation is a little bit overblown. It makes a great headline. Sure. But it's not as though everyone with a job is actively looking to quit that job. Mm. And so, in fact, if we go and look at some of the data on unemployment, unemployment is actually down to where it was pre-COVID almost at this point. And so it's not as though the candidate pool is, you know, just flush with bodies. The challenge for construction is that there's a general lack of excitement from young folks. And from organizations in construction, there's an over-reliance on conventional methods, right? Which is, well, this is how we've always done hiring. And it seems to have served us okay up until now. And so we're just going to keep doing it that way. And what's happening is the way that construction organizations are recruiting and hiring is moving away from the way that candidates like to be recruited and selected. And so you've gotten this widening of a gulf between the candidates that construction companies need to hire and what they're looking for from a potential employer. So it's tough out there for construction companies right now.
So I want to get in and kind of talk about, I'm big on, we just did a podcast with Offsite Tech, and they've done a lot. And the podcast we did was about how humans can work with robots. And it was just fascinating of Dwight's 40 years of working with robots, but the whole critical path is getting the people and the technology to match up together. I'd be curious, how can construction companies of all size improve? And all size is a key thing, right? Because a lot of the people that make construction work are the warriors that are working underneath some of those big names and brands that you had said at the beginning of this call. So how can construction companies of all sizes improve and automate their hiring processes? Can you kind of walk us through your process with that?
Yeah, I think step one is defining what isn't working, and what isn't working is different at different organizations, right? For some organizations, what isn't working is we have more candidates for these job openings than we can effectively process, right? And so how do we winnow that candidate pool down? For some organizations, the challenge is, you know, we continually hire people that we think are going to be great, and they're not great. Right. So that's a different problem.
Or we're not great and the person is just the wrong person.
Yeah. And then interestingly, the flip side of that is we have somebody that we absolutely love. And every time we get one, they leave 5 or 6 months after. Right. So what's going on there? And so for us, our process is we always want to really understand what the challenge is. And it's different from small to medium and large. It's different based on the climate and the landscape of their business. But we always step through kind of a problem identification process. Once we've done that, it's about designing a solution to be efficient and effective. You know, I think one of the mantras for us is treat your candidates like your customers. And that's kind of a foreign concept, I think, to a lot of folks in the construction industry. You know, it's been for a long time, it's been, well, we're paying them, right? And so they should accept this, you know, this plodding, inefficient process. And Gen Z is going to push back against that. And so our goal is to design and implement a process that is very efficient and very effective. It gets you the information you need to make wise hiring decisions without being unnecessarily lengthy or cumbersome for the candidate.
That is great. So how can contractors and affiliates attract talent from outside the industry? As we're talking about, there's, you know, we got to look other places outside of construction. And from your point of view, why should they?
Well, I think why should they is an easy one. So I'm going to answer these in reverse order. I'm going to start with the really easy one and go back to the more challenging one. Why should they is because there are people out there with the skills and competencies to be very effective in positions that construction companies need to hire for. I think your example earlier about the electrician who was a hair braider is a great example of that, right? There are plenty of people out there who can do the job and do it really, really well. It's about matching those people up and finding them and understanding their competencies so that you can hire them on. In terms of how to attract that talent, that's certainly a much more challenging question. I think the first one is you have to ask the question, well, where might those folks be, right? What does a really effective project manager look like? Well, they're bright and they're organized and they communicate well and they are very punctual, right? Well, those qualities aren't construction specific, right? I didn't say anything in there about, necessarily reading a blueprint or, knowing the different, cuts of material. So where would you go to find someone who is good at communicating and organized and likes to be punctual? Well, there's a lot of places. You could go to business administration, right? Or even something like finance, or even the social sciences. I think part of it is getting out of the pigeonhole of we have to recruit people that have the right kind of background, and then challenging.
They have to check all these boxes.
That's right. So I think that's part of it. And I think we can go through that exercise, and we have gone through that exercise for different positions, right? Well, we need field engineers, or we need builders. Okay, so you need mechanical aptitude, you need intellect, you need someone who's a systems thinker. Okay, so those people go to logistics, they go to technology and software development. So what we have to do is we have to go find the skills that we want and then repurpose them for what our goals and what we want them to do on the job. And so the investment, honestly, is often more in training in good habits from people who have the right competencies and skills. And so it's identifying, where those candidate pools might be.
Love it. Yeah, we've been doing a series titled the Blue Collar Warrior Series with John Stambaugh, who's the logistics director for my window company, and Art of Construction, with all the exciting things we have mapped out in our deliverables. And a lot of that is to, the next generation from us who have grown up and whatever it is. So I'm curious of, what is the new generation or the Gen Z, if we want to say a bracket, what do you think they're looking for in a workplace, and how can construction attract them?
Yeah, this is a fun question. I think that there are definitely some trends in that generation that merit consideration from employers. I think if we did a survey of, all of your listeners and asked them this question, what we would probably hear from them in terms of what their experiences and beliefs are about what Gen Zs are looking for is, well, they want a lot of flexibility, right? They want to work from home. They want great work-life balance. And that's true. That's definitely on the list. And that's a significant challenge for construction companies. How do you build in flexibility to a job that is so regimented and structured and schedule oriented? But more than that, what our research has shown is that there's a boldness in Gen Z wanting more from their employer. They want more direction. They want a bigger investment in career pathing. They want more money if they're doing a good job, and they're not afraid to ask for it. And they're not afraid to leave if they're not getting it. And so they want to see a thoughtful approach to taking care of them from their employer, right? When we kind of have to step back and get into the mindset of what they've seen, right? So they grew up in 2008, 2009, they were youngsters, right? And so while they were youngsters, they experienced the recession through their parents who were struggling and who were being challenged. And then once they got to adult age, they were hammered by COVID, and they spent a year seeing their parents and their friends again get laid off and experiencing that. And then now on the back end of it, they're saying, hey, I can see how quickly things can turn against me as an employee based on the market. And so what I want from an employer is someone who is committed to taking care of me when bad things happen. And so if they don't feel that from their employer, they're going to ask for more. And if they don't get more direction and guidance and communication, then they're going to go elsewhere to try to find it. And that's a significant, I think, change from historically how organizations have thought about their employees. But that's what Gen Z expects and what they want. And it's, so I think lastly, and there's a third one here that's a little less, you know, surprising or significant maybe, right? So one is they want more from their employers and they're bold about it. Two is they do want flexibility and really a willingness to be flexible from their employer. And I think number three, and again, this is not unexpected, is they want to like where they work. You know, there's no more of this mindset where, well, I'm just going to go to work. And if I don't like it, well, they pay me and that's okay. They want to be appreciated and they want to enjoy where they work. So culture is very, very important to Gen Z. So organizations, if they haven't, you know, taken the time to define it and understand it and learn how to talk about their own culture, a Gen Z candidate is going to pick up on that and they're going to go find someone who is a bit more deliberate about their own culture. So those are the three big things.
So much gold in there for us that have grown up in construction to just stop and think about, right? And look yourself in the mirror. The other part, I really curious to get your feedback as we're in the final stages of launching the AOC IT house, as we've hit this pinnacle of 250 podcasts and over 500,000 listens around the globe. It's people always say, Devin, what's your product that you're selling? And I'm not just building something to sell, but from the evolution of all these great people that tell their story like Craig, is we're putting together this AOC IT house or this digital box to just help that. And I mean, really curious for you to talk about, there's so many different, all different kinds of different personality tests and such that everybody looks at to just say, how do I take this box and put it into this box so I don't have to deal with all this stuff? Like the word culture, how do I just do a coaching thing? And the, like the Myers-Briggs test, for example, that are still often used by the people running HR, because HR is hard and you kind of got to live through this and understanding how this works when it comes to hiring people and all this stuff. So do you think those things bring any benefit today to the hiring process? And if not, what should we do as the as a leader of the Art of Construction tribe, bring this thing forward to not waste crusty contractors' time or the crazy Gen Z or kid that doesn't know shit and I have to do everything?
Yeah. So big believer in testing, but not a big believer in outdated methods of doing that, right? Like the Myers-Briggs test, right? It's a 40-minute assessment. And on the back end of it, you get really broad, you know, kind of buckets that are supposed to tell you who you are. Our mantra with HighMatch has always been, you know, we want to measure the things that matter and not waste time on the stuff that doesn't. And so historically, we've always seen that whenever a candidate goes through a selection process that is wrought with unnecessary steps, they get frustrated. And I don't know if you've noticed this, Devin, but I've seen this in my time in the industry. Contractor candidates, construction candidates sometimes are of the impatient sort. And if you give them a lot of unnecessary tasks, doing things that don't really bear a relevant job, they're not going to enjoy that, right? It's the same thing. Treat your candidate like a customer. You're not going to ask your customer to do a bunch of unnecessary stuff by your product. You're going to make it as easy and efficient and efficient as possible. So our belief system has always been around, we believe deeply in the value of testing. But we want to measure the things that are important and that give you benefit as an employer to selecting the right person and raising your hiring batting average. As part of our process, we're going to help you define what those things are. This is what we do with our construction companies, right? What are the things that are important? Is it mechanical aptitude? Is it organizational habits? Is it drive and determination? Is it comfort and conflict, right? Let's define what those things are and then build a measurement strategy around those important, critical soft skills and behaviors, and not waste our time with kind of out of the box tests that take 45 minutes to 90 minutes to get through. And then whenever you get the report back, you're scrolling to page 7 because that's really the only thing that you care about. We're fighting very hard against that, you know, kind of out of the box approach to assessment and testing.
That is gold. So the story I said about the hair braider gal turning electrician in a factory, how can we help make construction more diverse and inclusive in the hiring process? Which there's a lot of news about that, but it's really important stuff that I want the Art of Construction tribe to get your take on, really thinking about that, on moving this thing forward.
Yeah, so I definitely have a lot of thoughts here, and I'll be succinct, I promise. I think that there are three things that I would touch on for how to increase diversity and the value of diversity. The first one is that if you want diversity, and there are a lot of reasons to go for it, if you want diversity, then you can't fish out of the same pond, right? If you want to go fish for trout, you can't go to the same pond where you've historically caught bass and expect to pull a bunch of trout out, right? You're going to be driving home with an empty bucket. And so there has to be a willingness to expand the candidate pool and where you're fishing, right? I think that's number one. If you're going to the same pond hoping to get more diversity, it's not going to happen. So number one, you got to fish different ponds. Number two, and this is one that's very unique to construction. If you're demanding a ton of experience in order to make a hiring decision, what you're doing is you're recruiting from a pool that is already not diverse. And you're recruiting people who, for whatever reason, don't have a job at another construction organization, right? So I want somebody with 5 years of experience in construction. That person probably isn't going to have diverse characteristics that you're looking for. And if they do, there's a reason they're looking for a job, right? And so we always challenge our construction clients to think about, what are you hoping to capture when you say 5 years of experience? Tell us what you're using that for. Right. I want to know that they can talk to construction clients. All right. So let's build in a very detailed interview to dig into that and hear how they would have that conversation. I want to know that they can read a blueprint. Okay. Well, instead of hoping that 5 years of experience has gotten that for you, let's measure that. Right. Let's give them some questions and some tasks designed to assess their ability to do just that. And so it's being very intentional about defining what you want in candidates and not just hoping that experience gets you that. You know, there's a lot of really interesting research on habits in psychology. And that research has shown conclusively that training out bad habits takes a lot longer than training in good ones. And so if you're pulling in someone who has 5 years of experience and all of that experience is built around some bad habits, you're going to have a really hard time training those out from that experienced employee, right? So, and then the last one, and I think this is, a little more academic, but I think it's a really useful thing for people to think about. Let's imagine that we have a final candidate pool that has four candidates that we're considering for a position. And we send them to the hiring manager, and the hiring manager does their interview. And at the end of the interview, they say, these are the two candidates that I connected with the best. And lo and behold, those candidates look and think like the hiring manager. That doesn't mean that the hiring manager is intentionally trying to limit diversity. There's a lot of research in psychology that says we're naturally drawn to people who think and look like us, right? And so whenever it gets to that
they're
point—
They're me.
That's right. Yeah, it was easy to talk to him about golf, right?
So yeah, they Craig, think like can I hire you to go golfing?
That's right.
Oh, wait, that doesn't help sell windows and doors, right?
And so there's this idea that's been confirmed through a lot of studies that subconscious bias in the hiring process is very damaging. And it's not as though hiring managers, again, are trying to be biased or trying to limit diversity. It's just when they get to that point in the process, if you're not giving them very objective, actionable data points to help them make their hiring decision, they're going to be naturally drawn to the people who think and look like them. And so it's building in a way to put all candidates on an equal scale and then use the results of that evaluation to make the decision, as opposed to a hiring manager saying, I really just had a connection with them, or I feel like they would fit in here. There are multiple steps from recruiting to selection that have to be taken very seriously if construction's going to address the diversity problem.
Gold. So we've went through the process. We've got it all dialed in. You've made this huge investment in time and money at any level of your company, whether it's your first employer or your 1,000th employee. After you've hired them, what are some of the actionable tips for the Art of Construction Tribe when it comes to what I think is the critical part of the word that we cringe in construction because we all struggle to make time for this? Onboarding.
Yeah, I don't know if you did research on me, but my dissertation was on newcomer onboarding. So I've got some thoughts here. The onboarding has to start pre-hire, right? And what I mean by that is you have to weave into the recruiting and selection process some information about what they're getting into, right? We have to set realistic expectations. We have to give them a realistic preview of what the job is going to look like in the first 2 months, in the first 6 months, in the first year. So step one is taking some very intentional steps to align expectations with experiences. Because one of the things that we know and that we've learned is that whenever a candidate comes in with very lofty expectations and those expectations aren't met, then it creates a lot of negative outcomes and thoughts for that candidate. Right. And so we want to make sure that expectations are at a reasonable level. Interesting story about this. Right. So Auburn had a football coach some years ago that used to talk about whenever they would recruit a high profile high school football player, they would get them in the door and immediately they had to start de-recruiting that player. In today's landscape, if you're having to de-recruit your candidates, once they're hired, they're going to go find something else, right? They're not going to like the way that feels. And so in order to accommodate that, you have to weave into the hiring process some realistic previews of what the job is going to look like. Communication is extremely important. And so in those one-on-ones after hire, right, having conversations that sound like, hey, I know that there are some things that you don't love about the way that we do things at this point. Can you write those down or let me know what those are so we can talk about it and we can try to figure out if there are ways to resolve it or to fix it? What's interesting, and if your listeners have done this just as a part of their process, in the first 3 months, they're going to ask that question. They're not going to hear anything because there's a honeymoon phase after when you take a new job where people say, oh, no, I love it. Nothing's wrong. It's the same concept of, you know, trying to deliver marriage counseling once a couple gets back from the honeymoon. Man, they're in love with each other. They're happy. There's nothing wrong. This person could do no wrong. I'm just excited to be here. But the importance of those conversations early on is that it lays the groundwork for open, honest communication once the honeymoon phase has worn off. Actionable tip, right? If you're looking for something to do with this, once someone gets in the door, set the standard for open and honest communication very early on, which is, hey, I know that there are some things that aren't great that we struggle with. Here's a list of those things. Tell me what you've seen as a candidate. And go ahead and build that into the process. It pays great dividends down the road.
And so Art of Construction, we're big fans of the people that we believe really make construction tick. And that's the people that may be a solopreneur or looking to say, how do I just get a couple people onto the team? But that's hard when you say, okay, where do I go to figure this out versus just a referral? But like to systemize this thing is what I'm hearing from you versus just going hiring the guy that you golf with or someone that's just like you. How much company resources should a small to medium sized business be putting towards their hiring and onboarding process?
I'm biased on this question, but my answer is as much as they can afford to. Businesses, small businesses often grow because they have better people than other small businesses. And so if you're not putting energy and effort and resources into getting those people, then it's going to bite you, even if you have a better mousetrap, right? The best mousetrap out there, if you don't have somebody to talk about it and to sell it and to generate enthusiasm and interest around it, it's doomed to fail. So small, medium-sized businesses that need people, as much as you can afford to invest it, whether that's promotional ads on job boards, whether it's a presence at local career fairs, if it's community colleges or universities or job fairs, just investing, you know, time and money into showing people that you want the best. Because candidates like that, right? They like an organization who says, we're looking for the most talented folks we can possibly get, and we're willing to invest time and money and energy into getting them. So it should never be a back burner. You know, we'll invest in people whenever we make enough money, right? Or whenever we get a big sell or close a big deal, that's when we'll invest in people. Well, you might be waiting too long at that point.
I love that. So now you got to put the money where the mouth is here, Craig, talking about that. Give us some examples of how you've seen some of your clients grow their business after working with you.
Yeah, so our big metric is turnover reduction. That's where we see kind of the most immediate and sustainable bottom line impact for our clients, right? So we have a lot of case studies on this, but you know, we have a lot of instances of our clients coming to us and saying, "Hey, our sales have grown since you helped us hire better salespeople," or our you know,
wait,
budget.
They're better at selling the sales grow.
Believe it or not.
And they may not be because they know how your widget or your perfect thing you have. They're the best at selling it. Like, it's fascinating for me owning a window and door company to see the people that come in and how they scale and how ups and downs, but how they continue to scale is lifelong learners, but having management and coaches that is this team that's continuing to make it work. So I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Sometimes we just have to hit us and say what the obvious of why we're having this conversation is nothing happens till you sell something, but it's the execution is how you're actually having as much fun as possible.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And for us, we want to help our clients hire candidates who fit better into the job that they're being hired into. And there are two benefits to that, right? One is that, well, they're better at their job. And two, because they're producing and they're effective and the organization likes their work, they're happier and they're more satisfied. So they stay longer. Right. And so it's really both of those things. It's amping up effectiveness and dialing down turnover. And it's often, you know, easier for our clients to do the math with turnover. Because, for instance, right, let's say you have 50 sales reps and 25% turnover in those 50, and their average salary is $50,000, right? So if we use a conservative estimate of what it costs to replace that 25% at $50,000 average salary, you're looking at $125,000 a year in turnover costs to replace them. If we were able to dial that back, and we have, to 10% turnover, right? We've just saved $75,000 just with people who aren't leaving and having to replace the people who leave. That doesn't even include the cost that you're...
When someone leaves, someone else is just standing outside the door waiting, right?
Yeah, right. And that person is well trained and has all the skills and abilities and nuances of your business. So you don't have to invest in any training. I wish that's the way that it worked out.
Totally.
Those are the things that we see, right? Better people who leave less often.
Well, as we work to close this thing out, the questions we always ask, I love getting the perspectives. What is your crystal ball when it comes to the future with technology in construction?
So I'm gonna stick in my wheelhouse, right? And that's on the selection and recruiting side. There's a lot of effort that's been put into customer management systems. I think candidate management systems are the thing of the future, right? It's getting the right insight at the right time for your candidates, right? I had a field engineer leave. I need to go and hire a new field engineer. Hopefully, if you've done a good job, you've got a list of candidates that have come through your system at different times who you can go and call, right? And you know who the most desirable ones are, who have the best skills and the right experience and the right salary expectations and all of that stuff. And it's already queued up for you to go and look at. And so I think, and some of your clients are probably already starting to see this, but really dialed in candidate management systems to help make recruiting and selection easier. I think that's, you know, going to be a very useful tool on the talent side of construction.
So important to say, because to begin with the end in mind, we run out of time to say, I just got to get this project done. I got to put all my energy into this executable for the customer. And you're forgetting about the most important one, which is your internal customers, to help break through the ceiling to move this thing forward, which the candidate management system is a key takeaway and something we all got to be thinking about here. So the last question we always ask, what is that one thing you want to leave our contractors and affiliates to think about as they go out there to crush it, to grow their business?
I think not going to be surprised, but you have to build a business that great people want to work at. If you have very talented, very effective employees who are leaving, you have to invest time to figure out why. You want to be the place that great people want to work. And if you're not, you need to spend some time doing that. Great people is the biggest asset that a company can have, even better than a great process. And I'll give a story about that, if you don't mind, just real quickly here. I am a huge Auburn football fan. I grew up one, love Auburn. And I'm going to speak positively about Nick Saban here. Hopefully this doesn't reach any of my buddies, who are going to give me hell about this.
Conflict of interest here. I'm intrigued.
Just a little bit, but, the leadership, researcher in me knows a good leader when I see one, and Nick Saban's one of those. If you ask people what they associate with Nick Saban, at least as a coach, they talk a lot about the process, right? That he always talks about the process, right? We got to have a good process. But there's an interview that he gave a while back where somebody asked, well, why do you like coaching in college better than coaching in the NFL? And he said, well, in the NFL, you only get one first round draft pick. In college, I can have as many as I can put on my team. And so what he's saying when he says that is that the process is really, really important, but the people is what makes a great team. And if I get the right people, then the process is going to be more effective. And so to the listeners who were thinking about, well, what's the most important thing for my business? The most important thing is not a great operational process. And we see this time and time again. The most important thing is having great people. And you have to build a business that great people want to work at. So that would be my soapbox, right, for growing your business.
Craig, so many great things for us to think about. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. We'll make sure to put all this information on the show notes of how to get a hold of you, because we're all trying to figure this out, and we commend you, and we're so grateful to have someone in this field that's focusing in construction and coming up, stepping up to the mic and sharing your story.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for having me. Really grateful for your platform and your listeners as well. So really appreciate it.
Awesome.
so much gold here, Tribe. I gotta do a little bit of a longer recap here because there's so many things that I heard that I want to repeat back to you for you to think about to go out and crush it. Number one, treat your candidates like your top customers. Because we all know how hard it is to attracting talent, right? And so you all have to think about this, and it all boils down to we all have to be good communicators, and we all have to work on that day in, day out to find people that have that, what we call the eye of the tigers and want to be lifelong learners. And so I want to call myself out here of the Gen Z, and I'm kind of in the middle of this gooey middle in my 40s. He talked about how you have to have this thoughtful approach. And I raise my hand, and there's sometimes, God, these damn kids, and they need more money than I got, and I have to do all the job, and so on and so forth. But the culture matters. And we've been talking a lot about that. And that's stuff that's really hard to put on a PowerPoint or a process. And the team that's inside of my team will really laugh when you say it's hard to put culture on a PowerPoint. And we got to think about the next people coming in to run these companies for the people that are passing the baton. They grew up seeing their parents going through the recession and all the issues and all the hardships of that. And then they go out on their own, and then they got handed, here's your friendly COVID friend to go make it happen, right? So we have to think about that, right? And we have to communicate, but most importantly, Tribe, this is what's really, really hard. You have to live the commitments you've made. And I'm seeing it over and over again. You know, money talks and bullshit walks. And that's where we're at right now, is they're going to call you out and they're going to hold you accountable for that, right? And so when it comes to when we're launching this AOC IT house, day in, day out with great leaders of the Tribe like Craig, is you have to measure what matters. And I ask you this to say, what matters today, is it the same thing that mattered 40 years ago with the different testing and things that a lot of people may still be doing when it comes to construction? And the part that really resonated me is I see crusty contractor and people out there just sitting at their fishing pond doing the same thing over and over and saying, how do I get a different fish? If you want to catch a different fish, go to a different pond. And go back and listen to episode 250, where we hit the reboot and the reset of the system build lifestyle about blending offsite and onsite construction. That is the pond you got to be thinking about, because it opens up so many different ways to move construction forward. And you have to treat your candidates with the same mantra of your top customers. I can't say that enough, because just treat people the way you want to be treated all along the way. With that said, the experience you are requiring, what historical lessons learned, I ask you, are they the key to this? Or are they moving backwards? And I can promise you, it's harder to untrain than to uptrain. And he talked about that, and I wrote that down when he was talking, because we're all famous for just getting the person that knows everything, and then I don't have to actually train them. Be careful about what you have to untrain, Tribe. And let's not just think about our better mousetrap. It's all about adding candidate management systems to your AOC IT house. And I tell you, Tribe, thank you all, because who's ever listening to this is taking the time to work on their business and is thinking about this stuff. And I thank you all for being lifelong learners. And baby, you're all first-round draft picks in my book, and we all can come together and make this happen. Crush it out there, Tribe.